Beate Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We're a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a guest to join me for a conversation on different topics. Today, I have invited Matthew Gardner to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Matthew, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Tēnā koe, Beate. Thank you for having me.
Matthew Gardner and I, we are both members on the NZCBCIR, the New Zealand Catholic Bishops Committee for Interfaith Relations. The aim of the committee is to further understanding, mutual respect and dialogue between Catholics and members of other world religions in New Zealand, and to work with people of other faiths for the good of the whole community. Matthew is our NZCBCIR member who is based in Christchurch. Matthew, can you tell us more about maybe how you got involved in interfaith and about your group in Christchurch?
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Beate. So my interfaith journey, where did it start? So I guess it sort of started in high school to a degree. So I was brought up, I've been an active Catholic my whole life, brought up in a very Catholic family. And, you know, we've always been active churchgoers and actively involved in our community. But I was very much just exposed to sort of the Catholic viewpoint in life, so which is understandable being in a Catholic family. But then I do remember very much when I was seventh form, which is year 13, I think they call it these days, we had a term topic of world religions. And so I remember being quite fascinated, and my teacher at the time had some interesting perspectives on what it would be like to be born into a different religion. And so we learnt about Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism and some, you know, not in depth, I don't think, but we touched on. And I do remember at the time just going, oh, well, you know, that's quite interesting. There's lots of different perspectives out there. But it wasn't until I was in my probably mid-20s and I was living in Wellington, and now I was quite actively involved in the young adult scene in Wellington. I was one of the leaders for a group we had called SMIACS. It ran out of St. Mary of the Angels Church in the Wellington CBD. And so I was one of the leaders there for that group. And there was a national interfaith forum being held in Wellington. So I think this was either 2000 and... It must have been 2010, but I could have the year wrong. And anyway, Sister Catherine Jones, who was very active in interfaith in New Zealand, and she was the chair of the New Zealand Catholic Bishops Committee for Interfaith Relations at the time. She invited me, she gave me a call and said, would I like to meet up for a coffee? And sat me down and told me about there's this interfaith thing going on and they'd like some young active Catholics to represent the Catholic Church at the forum. So I went as a representative for the Catholic Church as a young adult. And I just remember being blown away. I was really interested and really inspired. And I was brought up in Christchurch, which is not very multicultural anyway, and is quite conservative. And so some of the viewpoints, for example, which I'd maybe been told about Islam, for example, I didn't know much, but I remember thinking that I should not talk to a female Muslim. And sort of, you know, men and women are to be separated, and just little things which sort of maybe hadn't been taught to me, but I just sort of observed. But I just remember going to this conference and getting stuck next to this young Muslim girl from Australia, and she started having this big conversation to me about her theological understanding of the love of God. And for me, it was like, hey, I'm talking to a Muslim girl wearing like a full hijab, you know, and... you know, quite conservatively dressed, and I had no idea that Islam had a big theology on the love of God, and you know, that God was a loving God and all these different things similar to what I believed. And so that was sort of an eye-opener for me. And then I remember getting asked, they asked a question at that forum, and we all had an opportunity to respond, like, why are we involved in interfaith and why should we be involved in interfaith? And I think the thing which came to me at the time, which I think is like inspired by the Holy Spirit, was that, well, God's asked us to love our neighbor, love God and love your neighbor. Like, it's very clear, you know, these are the main teachings of Christ. And, And our neighbours are people of all faith, of all backgrounds, of faith, not of faith, of everything. And how do we love someone if we don't know them? And so it's all very well to say, well, I love you, but if I've never met you and I know nothing about you, I may be offending you, or I may be, you know, like I'm just not really actively loving someone if I don't know them. So I sort of felt called that, you know, I feel God is calling me, at least in my spiritual path, to get to know my brothers and sisters of a faith. I don't have to believe exactly what they believe, but I can see a lot of goodness. There's parts of their religions, of all religions that I've encountered, that there's really deep beauty in everything. And I don't accept everything that they may teach, but I don't see any reason why I can't accept the beauty which they have. And yeah, often it's inspired me to become, you know, to want to learn more deeply about my own faith and to sort of maybe take up some spiritual practices which I had let go by. Like, you get really inspired, like Hindus do really devout fasting. You know, like many, not every Hindu obviously, but I've met many Hindu people. Some of them go one day of every week without food or water for a whole 24 hours. And I'm like, well, like, I've never done that in my life, you know? And then obviously our Muslim brothers and sisters do a very devout fast right through Ramadan. And then I was thinking about our, you know, it inspired me, like, we've got our own Lenten practices, and is there benefit in me doing a more devout sort of time of prayer and almsgiving and fasting and everything? So, yeah. So I'm probably rambling on a little bit.
Yeah, I think what you've described is really also very helpful to people who are interested maybe in getting involved in interfaith. And recently we published this book about some hints or some information on protocols that would help Catholics, for example, to be together with other faith groups. And I think that's exactly what you say. You say, well, I didn't know, can I talk to a Muslim woman? And I think that's why this booklet is so important, that people can use it as a handbook almost.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. No, so yeah, it's a really nice handbook. And if you haven't seen it, then your parish may have a copy. They may not still have a copy. I don't know. Or just feel free to get in contact with any of us on the committee. You can get in touch. I'm sure Beate will have a link on there with some contact details.
Matthew, how is interfaith life in Mumbai? Did you have any experience from there?
Yeah, sure, Beate. So it's a very interesting life in Mumbai. So the fact that there's such a large number of people, it's so densely populated, and most people have one religion or another in Mumbai. So basically everyday life is interfaith in action. In Mumbai, we have Christians, Muslims, Hindus particularly, as well as many other religions, Buddhists and Sikhs and Jains, living side by side. So one small example is there's a road quite close to my house, where our apartment in Mumbai, called Bazaar Road. So it's quite a small crowded road, and you can go down there, and there's a Christian chapel, there's a masjid, and there's also a Hindu shrine within probably 50 meters of each other. And that's quite common. You walk down the road, you see Christian, you know, like a cross where people stop and pray with some candles, and then you'll see another place with some Hindu imagery. And so, yeah, so it's a very multi-faith society, and people seem to get on very well. They share each other's feast days. Like, you know, like I know for my wife, she looks forward to Eid because she gets fed really nice biryani. And her neighbours will always invite her. And likewise, at Christmas, the Christians offer sweets to their neighbours in the building, so that to the Hindus and Muslims and whoever else is in the building. And so, yeah, life in Mumbai seems to be, there doesn't seem to be too much tension, although tension is rising in India with, that's in a whole other story, but there are some political things happening. But generally, the people seem to get on very well, and it's a beautiful multi-faith society.
Sounds wonderful. What are you doing in Auckland?
Yep, so I'm in Auckland because I've just returned from India with my family. So we're doing a compulsory 2-week quarantine at a hotel in the CBD of Auckland. So we were quite lucky to get placed in Auckland. I think I know some people got bussed off to Rotorua and things, which is fine. But after flying for 16 hours with two young children, we were quite happy to not have to take another 3 or 4 hours on a bus. But yeah, so...
What did you do in India?
So we were in India since October. So sort of late October 2019 we left. So my wife is originally from Mumbai, which is a very large city. It's population, the greater Mumbai area is estimated around 23 million. So we've got young children. We've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. In fact, our 5-year-old, she turned 5 just a few weeks ago. So she's going to be starting school soon back in New Zealand. But we wanted an opportunity for our children to be able to spend time with the grandchildren, uncles, aunties, cousins, all of my wife's friends, and just to experience a bit of the culture. So we planned on going for 5 to 6 months, and I'm very fortunate to be self-employed, and a lot of my work is computer-based, so I was able to keep working and keep some income coming in. So we were going to play it by ear, and if it wouldn't work out, then we were going to come back earlier, but if we could, we were going to try and do 6 months. And then, unfortunately, a pandemic took over the world, and there was no possibility to come home. So we've been stuck. I mean, we had an apartment, and we were staying inside, keeping safe. But basically, we were unable to return home to New Zealand until just last week was the first flight that's been available to us in several months.
So when did you try to get home first? In April?
So India went into lockdown in March. And so they cancelled flights to Europe and America before the lockdown, from memory. I could have my facts a bit mixed up. It's been a bit of a muddle for the last few months. But it was the 20th of March, India went into lockdown. So they gave us 4 hours notice. The Prime Minister gave a national address on television and at 8 p.m. and he said at midnight tonight, the whole country is in lockdown. You're not to leave your house. He used some Hindu terminology to basically say that there's a imaginary line around each house that keeps you safe. And so this is from, I believe, from the story of Ram and Sita. And Ram had sort of put this line around the house and Sita was not to cross it because she was protected inside that house. And so that's in Hindu mythology. So I think a lot of the Indian population would have understood that. Basically pretend there's a line around our house and that will protect us and don't go out. And so,
and here in New Zealand, we were told that it's our bubble. So your bubble has a religious term in the Hindu terminology.
Correct. Yeah. So then there was no interstate travel. We couldn't leave our house except for essential services. Like only one person could leave the house at a time. Anyone under 10 or over 60 was not allowed to go outside. Very, very strict lockdown. And all domestic travel has been cancelled. All international travel, there's been no flights in or out of India since March. So we actually already had flights booked back in May that we'd already spent a lot of money on. That we were waiting, were they going to go ahead, were they going to get cancelled, is the lockdown going to get lifted, and they got cancelled. They waited till a few days before the flight before they sent us the official notice to say they were cancelled, but we're not sure if we'll get a refund or not. We've got a message from them saying they have a backlog of inquiries for refunds and they will attempt to clear the backlog by late August, so that's all we know.
And on the way to New Zealand, did you meet other people who were stranded? You were at least based in Mumbai, but if somebody was from another region from India and had the same problem, they might not even have gotten to Mumbai on time.
Exactly. So it was impossible for many people from around India to even catch the repatriation flights. So in, I believe it was May, the New Zealand government put on several repatriation flights. Now, there was only, I think, 3 flights, and the demand significantly exceeded the flights anyway. Like, there was, after that, there was 1,800 registered citizens and permanent residents who were still left in India after those flights had gone. So, but people in South India, people in North, people in East, the flights were from Delhi, mainly from Delhi, and then there was one from Mumbai, I believe, and it was not possible to travel domestically. If you could, you had to go through a lot of bureaucracy and get special passes and permissions. And then even then, we know of people who got the special passes and permissions and the police didn't let them through and they got turned back. A lot of uncertainty with the flights. Like, so with the flights which we caught, they were with Air India. So I know of one girl. So we formed in India, WhatsApp is a, like an instant messaging system that many of your listeners may be aware of. If not, it's sort of like a text message system that runs via the internet. So in India, everybody has WhatsApp, so it's the main way to communicate. And so we formed a WhatsApp group of Kiwis, like stuck in Mumbai, for example, and then there was another one of Kiwis who had booked for the flight which I caught, which was on the 23rd of June. And there was one lady on there, she was actually living in Rajasthan, which is quite a long way from Mumbai. It's a flight, several hour flight away, and she was there. Her husband is in New Zealand, and she had gone back. I don't know the exact reasons because I don't know her personally, but she had obviously gone back to visit family with her children, two young babies, and so she flew on her own with two babies in her arms to Mumbai, checked into the airport hotel for the flight the next day, and then she got a message from Air India to say that her booking has been pushed back, and she's now going to be flying on the 2nd of July. So she was really stuck because the only hotels open in Mumbai are the airport hotels. They're very expensive. They're about $300 a night. And then there were no flights back home for a few days. And then if she did get a flight home in a few days, then she was required to do mandatory 14-day quarantine by her state. And then she wouldn't be able to fly back for the flight
in Mumbai
the next time. So I don't know exactly what she did. I know that I've seen in the messaging that she appears to be coming back to Mumbai. She must have found a solution. But, I mean, she was in tears and she kept going. Like, she was leaving voice messages on this WhatsApp messaging system as well. And I just really wanted to go and help her, but there's nothing we could do. We're in New Zealand now anyway. And she went to the Air India office and she was calling her children are New Zealand citizens. And I was like, look, phone the embassy, maybe they can help. And no one could help her. And everyone just says, oh, look, just go home and come back. And the number of people like that is outstanding. Like, there's so many people stuck in South India. There's been no flights to South India. And it's like, it's 48 hour plus drive, and you've got to have access to a car, and then you've got to find a driver who's willing to drive you. And
oh my god,
yeah.
How was the flight itself from Mumbai to Auckland?
So the flight was really good, thanks to Air India and the government of India for organizing that flight. So the flight was arranged by the government of India to collect Indian citizens who were stranded in New Zealand, and so the Indian government was gracious in allowing New Zealand citizens to also catch that flight, and it was the first ever direct flight from Mumbai to Auckland. So it was a 16-hour flight, 15 and a half hours officially, but we sat on the tarmac for an hour at one end, and then we also sat on the tarmac for an hour when we arrived as well. So,
and then
it
you
was
were
closer
taken
to 15 hours on the plane.
And then you were taken straight into a bus to the hotel? How did it work?
Yes, so the flight was very, I mean, it was a bit eerie. It was like when you see, like, Ebola wards on TV, like the air staff were wearing full suits with hoods and plastic masks over their face. I mean, they kept to themselves. There was a bag of cold food on our seat when we arrived. We didn't really interact with any air staff anyway, but they were there for emergencies. And they gave everybody, we had to wear face masks in India to leave the house anyway. It's the law. So you have to wear a mask, but then they gave everybody plastic face shields. And if you sat in the middle seat, they gave you like sort of scrubs, like, you know, those blue medical with a hat and over your shoes and everything. So my wife got stuck, drew the short straw and had to wear that. But yeah, then we arrived to Auckland. So there was actually a medical emergency on the plane, which was actually someone with diabetes, we believe, because I happened to know one of the girls on the plane who was a doctor and actually went to assist So we think it was low blood sugar, but he was not very well at the time. So, of course, they wouldn't let us off the plane. The New Zealand government, understandably, was very paranoid about that. And they kept our plane sealed up until the medics and everything were ready to deal with him. And then we go inside. It was quite a process. The number of forms we had to fill. We get spoken to by a number of people in New Zealand. We get had our temperature checked at least three times at the airport by different people. And then, yeah, they basically split us into groups, and it seems to just be random as to whoever gets off the plane at what time as to what bus you get on. They put a small group of us, maybe 10 people, 15 maximum, on a bus, and they took us off to our hotel. And then again, we get temperature checked, and there's a big long process to get assigned your rooms and everything. But yeah, it's really well done. And
how is the quarantine now? Do you get checked also every day or every?
Yeah, so the quarantine is it seems to be very well run where we are, at least. So we get checked every 2 days physically. So a nurse comes to our room and asks us a bunch of questions and just checks our temperature. But I'm sure if we said we had some symptom, they would do some more checks, but for now we've been fine. And then they also phone us at least daily. And so I also got a phone call to say that someone who sat near me, my assigned seat on the plane, has tested positive. So I'm considered a close contact now. So I've been told I will be very popular and will probably receive multiple phone calls today, but so far that hasn't eventuated, nothing more than my regular daily checkup. So
we wish you all the best, and we hope that you stay COVID-19 free and your family. And how many days do you still have to stay in lockdown if everything is going well?
They're all going well. We check out in it's just under a week now, so the 8th of so it's Thursday today, and yeah, we check out on the Wednesday.
So I wish you all the best, and that you arrive safely in Christchurch and in July, and that your daughter, I think it's a daughter, right?
Daughters, yeah, two daughters, yeah. Maria and Teresa.
That your daughter will be able to start school for the first time now.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew, for this interview, and all the best. And just a few sentences for the Mercy Spirituality Centre. We have another member of the NZCBCIR who is going to give a presentation this evening at 7 p.m. And that's Dr. Christopher Longhurst. And that's a Zoom meeting. And it'll be behind the scenes of Vatican art and architecture. And you can still register for that via our website or email address. On Thursday, the 23rd of July, from 10:30 to 12:30, we'll have Brother Kieran Finn for a muffin meeting at the Spirituality Center, and he'll talk about the Eucharist and the four Gospels. And on Wednesday, the 29th of July, 7 to 9 p.m., we will have an interfaith event at the center, which will be organized in cooperation with the members of the Auckland Interfaith Council. For more information, please check out our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Or send an email at info@mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much, Matthew, for your time, and all the best in your special lockdown. And I hope to see you soon in reality at our next meeting.
Yeah, thank you.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Incompleteness in another.